Next up, however, we have a clip from Portland Troublemakers School, which is sponsored by Labor Notes. Every other year, they come into town and stir the pot a little bit around labor and putting the movement back in the labor movement. Mark Brenner and Young Nam were part of a workshop, Labor in the Trump Era, and they'll talk about right-to-work legislation and also universal health care.
What we want to do today is we want to hear from a couple of local union activists about some of the key challenges that we're facing as a labor movement in the Trump era, but mostly we want to have a conversation with you guys about what to do about all of these challenges that we're facing, because in many ways the million-dollar question is how do we address everything that's coming at us, not just to survive, but even maybe to thrive in this time. I think that in the Trump era, the challenge for the labor movement is, one is the stuff that's going to be done to us. The one that I'm going to speak to is the challenge of right to work. Certainly right to work and free, you know, the Supreme Court now has a full complement, very likely with Gorsuch appointed. We're going to have a new version of the Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association come through, some effort to get rid of fair share for public sector workers. So the idea that all of us are going to be working in an open shop in the not too distant future is a very real possibility. National legislation's already been introduced. But you guys know the list, right? It's not just that it's right to work. It's what's happening with every kind of health and safety standard. If you're in the building trades, all of the protections and, you know, kind of agreements you can get around project labor, around Davis-Bacon, all of these things that have sort of undergirded our unions for many, many years are threat. But we know what those challenges are. Those are the known knowns, as Donald Rumsfeld would say, right? The thing that I think we don't spend enough time talking about, and that's the second sort of major concern that I have, is the things that we're going to do to ourselves. Our labor movement hasn't had the best track record of thinking about how to respond to the challenging times. And I think that we've seen three kind of strategies that have really hit us and hurt us. I think they've proven unworkable for some time, but I think they're going to prove even more unworkable in the Trump era. One is trying to get a seat at the table. Basically, the idea is that somehow if we can get access, then we can figure out how to survive and what to do. That's essentially what we're seeing among some of the building trade union leaders right now. Like, Trump wants to build a lot of stuff. He's willing to open up the White House for us. We'll go meet with the guy, and maybe we'll get something out of it. Thinking that a seat at the table somehow gives you power. A deeper problem that I think is also something we're doing to ourselves is a lot of union leaders are looking at this era like things are terrible. Our job is to essentially help people be realistic about what we can do and manage expectations. I know that you actually do need to try and talk to people about what's realistic given the forces that we can marshal against the forces that our employer can marshal. We got to have that conversation. But that's different than trying to lower people's expectations preemptively. And I think in our labor movement, in this era right now, we've seen a lot of lowering of expectations. And I think quite the opposite is what is called for, that we need to really be raising expectations and aiming a lot higher. The third thing that I'm worried we're going to do to ourselves that I think is a longer standing problem that certainly doesn't stop or start with the election of Donald Trump as president is that our unions have a really bad track record when it comes to actually putting members in the driver's seat. And I think if ever there was a time when we are going to need members to feel like we are the union, is right now. But whether it's in the trades, whether it's in healthcare, we've seen over and over and over again, too many unions think about the way things happen from the top down. Like either elected leaders or even staff kind of say, this is what the union program is, this is what we're gonna do. And your job is to get on board with the program. That's the opposite of how you actually get people involved. Because if you really want to bring people in, you can't go and say, here's what you're going to do, take it or leave it. That's not an opening of a conversation about what's important to you. You know, what do you think we can do? And more than ever, we really need to start opening up these kinds of opportunities inside our unions to talk with each other about what should we be doing in this era. Because too many folks at the top think that's where strategy should get made. Whoever's in the room at the e-board meeting or when we're sitting down with the employer association, that's who should be making the, you know, talking about strategy. And those of us that are on the job every day, that's not part of what we need to do as union leaders. And I think we need to turn that whole thing upside down. And that one of our key challenges is figuring out how to have exponentially more people who actually have the skills to do it, have the confidence to do it, and whether they get the authority or take the authority, actually to go out and be taking action on behalf of the union. And I think that's a problem that didn't start with Trump's election, but it's something that in this era, if we don't fix, is going to be a massive shackle around our ankles. I'm going to say a little bit more about those things at the end, but I'm going to start by turning to our panelists to open up on a couple of key issues that we've got. On my far left, Hyung Nam, who's a teacher here in Portland Public Schools and active with Healthcare for All Oregon. I was going to talk a little bit about what is happening in the healthcare industry and how this is affecting us as union members, what we can do to get off of defense and not offense.
I'm about to take an unpaid leave of absence next year from teaching. So I'm looking at what that means. One of the things that it means that I will not get health care, and under the ACA, I will be required to buy health insurance in the exchange, or else I'm penalized. I'd have to pay a penalty that would be potentially, who knows, how many hundreds of dollars. So the lowest price health care, because I will not have any income next year, is $200-something a month for a bronze plan that has a deductible of $10,000 with a coinsurance of 30%. So that means that I will pay $200-something a month, and then not a single penny of the health insurance will kick in to cover me for anything until I pay $10,000 out of my pocket. And even then, I would have to pay 30% of all healthcare costs. So this is the kind of situation that we're in, that whether you're a worker or whomever, it is not sustainable. So first of all, I want to ask you, as union members, do you know what your healthcare premium costs for your employer and then for you? Do you know how it compares to what it costs if you were a worker in Canada or a country that has a real universal healthcare system? Do you think that your costs are higher or lower?
Higher.
Definitely higher, right?
Yeah.
Are you aware of how much the increases to your healthcare premiums and also your own out-of-pocket costs have been on an annual basis compared to your wages or salary? Have they been more consistently increased compared to your wages and salary?
Yeah.
How many of you think that negotiating over healthcare has been a major contract issue where you're pressured to give up other important things in your contract in order to hold on to your healthcare benefits?
No.
Yes?
Trick questions.
And how many of you think that healthcare also is important as far as other kind of contractual issues about defining what is full-time work or part-time work, or the pressure to push people into part-time work rather than full-time work, negotiating about retirement, about leaves and wages and so on? Yes? So for all these reasons, I want to argue that unions have to lead the effort to fight for single-payer health care, basically an improved Medicare for All, which we know is popular among the people, and which really shows this idea, an injury to one is an injury to all, because Medicare for All puts us all into one single risk pool, right? It's social insurance. It's a model of solidarity where we show that we're all in it together and that we all benefit when we're in it together. This is something that will benefit not only Trump voters, it will benefit immigrants, it will benefit workers in unions and outside unions. So to begin with, when we're talking about healthcare, I'm not just talking about having access to healthcare and being healthy. I'm talking about bargaining issues. So that when you are a union, you should not have to bargain, have your employer use healthcare as a bargaining chip to get other concessions out of you. You should not have to worry about going on strike, because if you go on strike, you're going to have to pay your healthcare costs, and you're going to decide to weaken your power and not go on strike because of healthcare. You should not have to divide your union between top-tier workers and lower-tier workers over healthcare or over retirement. Those kind of divisions are toxic. And what we know is that universal healthcare works. Also, under the ACA, there is a threat of this excise tax, what they call the Cadillac plan, that really puts the burden of paying for the expansion of Medicaid, which is really important, a lot on unions. We are already negotiated for good health care that everyone deserves, we should not be punished and taxed 40% of our premium above $10,200 for doing so. With the universal health care, we're talking about a publicly funded health insurance, just like Medicare, which we know works. It works more efficiently than our private system, with an administrative cost of about 3%. It actually works insuring the oldest, most sickest people in this country. In a way, it's like a service to health insurance companies saying that we will take them all off your hands and have the government be responsible for that. Well, if we could add everyone else into the single risk pool, it would work even better. And it would really strengthen the power of workers and unions, because we know that in the U.S. we pay more for health insurance than any other country, any other industrialized country, or any country in the world, and we actually get worse results than other industrialized countries. And in fact, there are examples like Ford Motor Company in 2017 that is moving a plant from Mexico to Canada. They're not coming to the U.S., and one major issue is healthcare. They don't have to deal with the kind of expensive healthcare in the U.S. and also negotiating over healthcare. In 2005, there was a Toyota factory that moved to Canada as well, and healthcare was one of the reasons. So we're not only talking about bargaining power, the costs, but also being able to have jobs and workers not losing jobs because of not being competitive over healthcare costs. So the way to do this, also one other thing I should point out, you know, of course, ACA has been a huge benefit to poor people. But ACA does not cover immigrants. We're talking about both undocumented immigrants and documented immigrants in the first 5 years. They are not able to benefit from the ACA as far as buying into the exchange and so on. So that is not universal health care. It is not solidarity. And labor unions are under attack right now. People are trying to portray us as all we care about are ourselves, especially public sector workers, right? If we lead the fight to gain universal health care for all, that is something that will benefit all of us. It will benefit our state budgets so that we can spend more money for social services, education, and so on. People will know that unions really benefit everyone. And when we talk about an injury to one being an injury to all, they will see that this is completely true, and this is the perfect example of that kind of a thing. So what you could do as a union is that movement for single-payer health care exists in every state, but there are 25 active states right now. Oregon's one of them. You could join Healthcare for All Oregon. We have 120 different member organizations right now. We have about 20,000 people in our database. We also have individual memberships. And by the way, you can get to all my information. Just go to www.hcao.org for Healthcare for All Oregon and join our movement. One thing you could do is you can get your union to be a member of HCAO if it's not already. You will have voting power within our organization. We're a grassroots, member-driven organization. You could also join as an individual member. This is a movement that we want to have labor lead, and we're talking about ballot measure because of the supermajority issue as far as any new taxes, because we're going to be funding universal health care for all, just like Medicare is funded through payroll taxes. So that means that without being able to get a supermajority, we're going to have a ballot measure, whether it's a referral or a ballot initiative. And it's going to mean a grassroots campaign where we're going to need massive numbers of volunteers. We're going to need people to help do education of the public to understand what this issue is and not to be fooled by the health insurance companies and pharmaceuticals so that we can win this campaign. So we need you to get involved, and you can contact me and others in HCAO about how to present a resolution to your union, to get your union to join as a member, and then how to get your members active in educating not only people in your own union, but also the public about how this issue affects us all. From even our employer's perspective, the only people that benefit from not having universal health care, a single payer, are pharmaceuticals, hospitals that make too much money, and of course the health insurance companies. It's going to take us all to work together to win universal health care for all. Thank you.